This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Hi listeners, this is Brent Sutton. Welcome to Season 5 and the 110th episode of the podcast show Hop Into Action. Hop Into Action is a podcast of the broadcast that can be heard on Safety FM. The show is an ongoing discussion about building a better community of practice for people and organisations who want to improve safety, quality and operational excellence using HOP, learning teams, the 4Ds and other learning frameworks. I explore through conversation, diversity of thought and reflection, the organisational challenges and learning opportunities that can be identified and improved by using HOP and learning teams for normal everyday work, management of change to create better work. For those of you in safety, it's about moving from preventative safety to productive safety and creating sustainable practice and improvement in operations. Today I want to explore learning teams and some of the common pushbacks I get from safety practitioners who are struggling with the shift from investigations to event learning and how they talk about collusion, hiding the facts and groupthink. I'll also explore the risk of moral injury in traditional investigation approaches. So please sit back and enjoy this episode of Hop Into Action. It is natural for humans to create barriers when new thinking rubs hard and challenges existing beliefs or what they have been applying for many years. I see this often in safety with investigations. Even changing the language from investigations to event learning raises the hackles for groups of safety practitioners, let alone the notion of a learning team. Quite often I hear, "How dare you get people together in a room? We can only learn the facts and the truths of what went wrong and who did wrong by separating people, interviewing them, comparing their stories, and creating a timeline to find the root cause of how they got it wrong." I also hear, "How can we hold people to account and create corrective actions for those who made a bad judgment call or mistake?" Sometimes it's been worse, with comments like, "People will collude. You're allowing them to hide the facts, and you are creating groupthink." In these situations, I always apply the HOP principles. And the HOP principles I apply are, context drives behaviour. Blame fixes nothing. How I respond matters, and learning and improving is vital. So let's start the conversation around groupthink. The Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia, states that groupthink is a psychological phenomenon that occurs within a group of people in which the desire for harmony or conformity in the group results in an irrational or dysfunctional decision-making outcome. Cohesiveness, or the desire for cohesiveness in a group, may produce a tendency among its members to agree at all costs. This causes the group to minimise conflict and reach a consensus decision without critical evaluation. When I look at that, what I take from that is that the potential consequences of this groupthink could be poor decision outcomes, absence of critical evaluation and appraisal, the suppression of learning, innovation and creativity, or the over-reliance of the group's correctness. Learning teams, by their nature, form diverse and collaborative groups that focus on open dialogue, critical thinking, and collective learning. A learning team leverages diverse perspectives to improve decision-making and that problem-solving, and that learning happens at both a worker level, a work group level, and an organisational level. A learning team can be characterised by these important points. Number one, it's all about open communication. We are encouraging all people to speak up and share ideas. Number two, it's about diverse perspectives, and we want to value and integrate those different viewpoints into the learning team. Point three is about critical evaluation and critical appraisal. We want that group to question the assumptions and critically analyse that information. Number four is we want to create a reflective practice. We want that group to continuously reflect on actions and outcomes in order for that learning and improvement to happen. Number five, that learning team, by its nature, that group is forming psychological safety. The facilitator of that learning team is creating an environment where those members of that learning team feel safe to express dissent and to take risks without repercussions. And then lastly, it's about facilitated learning. We are creating an environment where one person does not manage or constrain the outcomes. The feedback I get from people and my own observations and reflections on the benefit of learning teams is that they enhance decision quality through innovation and creativity. They also provide continuous improvement and learning. They improve team cohesion and the trust between the frontline and management. So, is there a link between groupthink and learning teams? I'm not convinced, but let's explore that. First of all, learning teams create the avoidance of groupthink. A learning team is designed to avoid the pitfalls of groupthink by fostering an environment where diverse perspectives are encouraged and critical evaluation and appraisal are the norm. This helps to ensure that decisions are well considered, potential problems are identified, and improvements are sustainable. Psychological safety. Learning teams emphasize creating psychological safety where workers and other stakeholders feel comfortable expressing dissenting views without that fear of retribution. This contrasts with groupthink, where dissent is often suppressed to maintain harmony. Critical thinking and reflection. Learning teams focus on continuous reflection and learning from experiences. This reflective practice helps to identify biases and assumptions that might lead to groupthink, thus promoting a culture of ongoing improvement and adaptability. And then the other important thing to remember with a learning team is we have a bit of a structured dialogue. Often when I run a learning team, I will use our methods such as the 4Ds, dumb, dangerous, difficult, and different, and our new model, the 4Ls, about what people like, what it lacks, what they long for, and what they learn. These structured methods guide discussions and ensure that all relevant aspects are considered, remembering there is never a set of complete questions that you can ask. The structured approach helps to mitigate that risk of groupthink by ensuring that critical issues are not overlooked. Then there's the role of leadership. In learning teams, leaders play a facilitative role. They encourage participation and they ensure that all voices are heard. This differs from the often direct leadership or authoritative leadership seen in groupthink scenarios where leaders may unintentionally suppress those dissenting views. Well, my final thoughts about groupthink and learning teams is that they both involve group dynamics, yet they represent opposite ends of the decision-making process and the outcome spectrum. Group thinking is characterized by a lack of critical evaluation and suppression of dissent, leading to poor decisions. In contrast, a learning team fosters open dialogue, critical thinking, and continuous learning, leading to better decision-making and organizational improvement. The second part of our conversation is the causal link between the event and the investigation and the risk of moral injury. And this is really what drove me to do learning teams to begin with. I was having a recent conversation about investigating a serious Nemus event. No one was injured but the event caused extensive damage, and the potential for harm could have been life-changing. The controls worked in responding and recovering from the event, but no one celebrated this, and the entire focus of the investigation was on the decision-making in hindsight and the role of human error. This is one of the primary reasons I stopped doing investigations and started using learning teams. Because I felt that learning teams was a method or an approach to help minimizing adding more mental trauma to those involved in the event, or, in the case of fatalities, extending that trauma to family and the community and the fellow workers of that victim. In my experience, and of course I may be wrong, but I have not seen an investigation model that considers the risk of extending trauma or aids in the recovery of a person's mana. Mana is a word from our Māori culture which talks about a person's pride, their belief, their culture, and their status. In reality, we are reducing a person's mana and causing moral injury if we don't understand this with an investigation. Moral injury in the context of safety events refers to the psychological and emotional distress experienced by people when they are involved in or witness events that deeply violate their moral beliefs, ethical principles, or personal values. This type of injury can occur when people experience a safety event that leads to harm, injury, or death, and they believe that they or others failed to uphold a moral obligation to prevent it. When you perform an investigation, are you cognizant of those violations of ethical beliefs? When workers feel that their sense of right and wrong has been breached, when they perceive that negligence, lack of accountability, or unethical decisions contributed to the event? Are you cognizant of feelings of guilt and shame? Workers who experience intense guilt or shame believe they could have done more to prevent the event or mitigate its consequences. Are you cognizant of conflict with professional identity? Events can create conflict for leaders or others whose roles involve ensuring safety, who may feel that their professional values were compromised. Just think of all that language we use around zero harm, or around life-saving, or cardinal rules. Are you cognizant of the emotional and psychological impact? This is present in how people respond to an event with a range of emotions including anger, blame, guilt, denial, grief, anxiety, and depression, and even more so when the event was avoidable or resulted from systemic failures. And are you cognizant of the impact on relationships? Moral injury can affect relationships of work colleagues, friends, and family. The distress caused by the event might lead to withdrawal, difficulty communication, or mistrust of others. When a serious event happens, how often have you seen people leave the organization months after the event? Now that psychological safety and psychosocial harm is being actively promoted by safety regulators, we need to seriously consider the role of investigations and use a better way of learning using restorative culture. In my use of learning teams, I've always had a focus on healing and recovery, which is restorative for every stakeholder and learning from the event. Recovering from moral injury can be challenging because it involves addressing deeply held beliefs and values. The restorative process requires open discussions, acknowledgement of our roles, and the systemic and organizational learnings and improvements to prevent similar events in the future. I'm going to be controversial here. In most situations, corrective actions and investigation reports don't aid recovery. In actual fact, they often continue the cycle of moral injury. Moral injury and safety highlights the profound impact these events can have on individuals, not just in terms of physical injury, but also on their moral and ethical compasses. Addressing moral injury requires a compassionate approach that recognizes the complexity of emotions and the need for supportive mechanisms to help recover and find that path forward. That is why I do learning teams. Learning teams are about that restorative process and also allowing that healing. My final comments to you all, we should never forget that not only can words harm, but also words can heal.